Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture in Financial Management. In the previous two lectures, we went over a very important part of financial management, which is known as dividend policy. And the objective of dividend policy was to determine what the best dividend payout ratio should be. You should recall from before that the dividend payout ratio is, of course, connected to the share pricing, because the formulas that we learned in share valuation, for example, the Gordon's formula, uses the forecasted dividend in order to calculate the share price or the required rate of return. So it is possible also to relate the dividend payout to the required rate of returns. And I should mention, before we leave the subject of dividend policy, that it's important to keep in mind that firms will often prefer to give out cash in the form of dividends for their shareholders if they cannot find suitable projects with positive NPVs. In other words, what I'm saying is that if firm has generated profits and saved them in the form of retained earnings or cash, or if the firm has raised capital externally from the outside market in the form of debt or in the form of equity, then unless the firm can invest or mobilize this money at a rate of return that is higher than the required rate of return for the equity or for the shareholders, then they might think that it is better to give away this cash in the form of dividends. Because the longer they keep it idle, or the longer they keep cash that is not generating enough rate of return, the greater the penalty they will have to pay in the long term. So this is why often, if because of maybe a recession in the economy or lack of attractive projects, the management oftentimes decides that because they cannot mobilize the funds at a high enough rate of return, that it is better to give part of this money out in the form of dividends and thereby enhance the share value and therefore the market value of the firm as a whole. So now I would like to move to another very important area of financial management that is known as working capital management. And after this, we will talk about working capital financing. Now, after having taken the course in financial accounting, you should be familiar with working capital. Just to recap, we began in this course talking about capital budgeting. And capital budgeting focuses on the fixed asset side of the balance sheet. We then spoke about capital structure, and that focuses on the liabilities side of the balance sheet. And now we are talking about working capital financing and working capital management, and that is concerned with the both sides of the balance sheet, the current portions of both sides, the current assets and the current liabilities. Let me first make some clarifications about the definitions. Generally speaking, when we use the word working capital or gross working capital, we are referring to current assets. What do we include in current assets? We include cash, marketable securities, accounts receivables, and inventories. These are the major four items that we include in current assets. Now, you should not confuse the word working capital with total capital. That is, in the sense that we used it in capital budgeting, when we talk about capital in capital budgeting, we are referring to fixed assets. We were talking about capital expenditure when we spoke about capital budgeting, and we were referring to investment in fixed assets mostly. Then we spoke about capital, and we used the word capital in capital structure. Over there, we were referring to financing. We were talking about capital as it relates to debt capital or equity capital, loans or share capital. So that is different from working capital. Working capital, technically speaking, is also slightly different from net working capital. In fact, the difference is considerable because net working capital is equal to the current assets minus the current liabilities. And what do we mean by current liabilities? Well, we include items such as accounts payable and accruals and short-term financing and short-term loans, as well as some minor items. Now, net working capital is an important measure, you will recall, of the liquidity of the firm. How easy is it for the firm to liquidate or to sell its current assets and to generate cash from them? Liquid cash. That's why the word liquidity is used. Liquid is referring to the ease with which you can sell the assets and get cash. And you will recall that in financial accounting we used a few ratios. One of them was the current ratio. That is a measure of liquidity. The current ratio is equal to the current assets divided by the current liabilities. And the other measure we used was the quick ratio, or the asset test. And that is equal to the quick assets divided by the current liabilities. And by quick assets, we mean the current assets other than inventory, because inventory is considered to be a difficult asset to liquidate and convert into cash. Now, when we talk about working capital or current assets, and we talk about the management of working capital or current assets, then there is a fundamental trade-off that you should be familiar with. The decision in working capital management is how much working capital should a firm have? How much money, how much cash of the firm should be tied up in working capital and current assets? How much money should be tied up in inventory? How much should be tied up in marketable securities? How much money should be kept in the form of cash? So this is the question that we need to answer, and the answer may not be numerically very easy to calculate, so we will rely on certain policies that are followed in the practical world and good business judgment. Now, I mentioned that there is a fundamental trade-off that we have to begin by understanding. So the question is, what is this fundamental trade-off in working capital management? That trade-off is that there are certain advantages to having a high current assets, and there are certain advantages to having a low current asset value. Now, if a firm maintains high current assets, then there is less chance of shortfalls taking place, less chance of interruptions in sales, and also there is a less chance that the firm will lose out on sales revenue. Why? Because they will always maintain a large amount of inventory on hand, and even if there is an unexpectedly large order, they will be able to meet it. Now, let's take a look at a firm that has a low current asset value. Well, this firm has the advantage that because it has a very, very small and limited amount of current assets, that there is a very small amount of money that has been tied up. Remember that working capital and current assets tie up money. And this is money that is tied up, for example, in the form of inventory or stock. And this money is not generating any rate of return. There is a zero rate of return on money that is stuck up in current assets. So, if a firm has a very low amount of current assets, then there is very little money that is tied up, and also the cost of capital is lower. Why? Because remember, if money is stuck up in current assets that are not generating any return, then that is very, very costly money, because that money is coming either from equity or a debt source, and that has a cost attached to it. But the return that this money is generating, if it is locked up in current assets, is zero. So we have to look at what managers practically do in the real world, and we have to look at the working capital management policies in order to decide what is the optimal amount of current assets for a company to maintain. Now, naturally speaking, the level of current assets will fluctuate with time depending on the sales and the seasons. Nevertheless, we can still take a look at the cases of different companies and how they try to maintain a target level of current assets based on their requirements. Now let's take a look at what kind of working capital management policies are practically used by financial managers in order to decide what the best amount of current assets and the mix of current assets to keep for their own company. Yahan pe financial managers ne bahut dilchasp naam chune hain working capital policies ke liye. Ek policy fat cat policy kehlati hai, dusri policy lean and mean policy kehlati hai. To aaiye inke bare mein baat karte hain. The first policy is the fat cat policy, and as the name suggests, in the fat cat policy, financial managers aim for a large value for current assets. They prefer to keep a large amount of current assets, large amount of inventory, large amount of marketable securities and cash. Why? Well, quite simply because they believe that they should not lose out on any sales at any cost. They never want to face a situation where a customer places a large order and the finished goods are not available with the company. Therefore, they will lose out on that order. And by keeping large inventories, they are able to maximize their sales revenue. Naturally, there is a problem also with this approach, because when you maintain large amounts of inventory, then you also have a lot of money that is stuck up and tied in the form of the raw materials and work in process, and there are carrying costs and shipping and handling costs that we'll talk about later on that are associated with having large inventory. Now, the second policy is called the lean and mean working capital management policy, and this is the opposite case. Over here, the financial managers try to maintain as low a level of current assets as possible. Naturally, it's not possible to maintain zero current assets, because it's necessary to keep a certain amount of money in the form of inventory and finished goods. It's necessary to maintain a minimum amount of cash balance in order to preserve your credit rating. And it's also necessary to maintain a small amount of marketable securities instead of cash, because by keeping marketable securities like investments in shares and bonds, the money and the cash of the company can generate a rate of return, which it cannot generate if the money is stuck up in the form of inventory, or if it is kept as cash, or even if the money is kept in a current account. In the case of Pakistan, businesses have current accounts, and there is no interest on current accounts. So, in the case of the lean and mean policy, the financial managers try to minimize the level of current assets, and by doing this, they minimize the amount of cash that is stuck in the form of inventory and other current assets, and they also minimize the cost of capital. Remember that money that is stuck up in current assets that are not earning any rate of return, such as inventory and cash, is idle money. And there is a penalty to be paid for this, because when you are raising money from the banks, you have to pay interest to them. When you are raising money from the shareholders, you have to pay dividends to them. And when you have raised this money better be working hard and generating a rate of return that is higher than the weighted average cost of capital, which we spoke about in capital structure. So, in the case of the lean and mean policy, the managers minimize the current assets, and therefore they can maximize the current asset turnover. This is very important. The current asset turnover is equal to the sales divided by the current assets. And the current asset turnover is a measure of the number of times you can cycle your working capital in 1 year. How many times do you turn around or roll over your working capital in 1 year? And the more number of times you can turn over your inventory, the more number of times you can turn over your current assets, the more frequently you can make your sales, the higher will be your total profit. I'm not talking about the profit margin, which is a percentage of the total sales. I'm talking about the total value of the profit. Remember that the total profit is equal to the profit margin multiplied by the turnover. And when you increase the current asset turnover, you increase the total profits. So, therefore, the lean and mean policy can be quite attractive. There is an extreme form of the lean and mean policy, and that is known as the zero working capital policy. Now, this is just a term. Naturally, working capital cannot be exactly zero, but the objective is to minimize it. And the Japanese, particularly Toyota Corporation, are the forerunners of just-in-time management, JIT. And the objective in this is that the spare parts and the supplies for the car, whether it's a bumper or a carburetor or the plastic molding or the lights, arrive just 1 or 2 hours before the car is actually made on the assembly line. So you minimize the amount of inventory and the time in which you have to keep the inventory. So you minimize the amount of space you need to store the inventory. You need less warehouse space. There's less money that is tied up in inventory. And you save your cash and you minimize your cost of capital. There is a third working capital management policy that is known as the moderate policy. And that is in between the fat cat and the lean and mean policy. Now, we mentioned at the beginning of this course that our objective in financial management is maximization of shareholder wealth, maximizing the total value of the firm, or maximizing the share price, which is a measure of the value of the firm. So what is the link between working capital policy and our fundamental objective in financial management? You will recall we spoke about the EVA, economic value added. And that can also be defined as the net operating income discounted by the tax minus the weighted average cost of capital multiplied by the total capital. In other words, the EVA is equal to the revenues that are generated by the firm minus the cost of capital for the firm in rupee terms. Now, the cost of capital, which is equal to the weighted average cost of capital percentage multiplied by the total capital. Total capital means debt and equity. This total capital includes the capital that we spoke about in capital structuring, as well as the working capital. So, if a firm follows a policy of reducing its working capital, then what happens? Well, by reducing the working capital, the firm frees up cash. This cash that was tied up in current assets is now free. And this cash can be used by the firm instead of the bank borrowing or instead of the external equity. So it's possible now for the firm to free the cash from the current assets and to use this cash instead of the debt and equity. So they can reduce their debt and equity. Therefore, they can reduce their total capital in terms of debt plus equity, and therefore they also reduce the total cost and the weighted average cost of capital, because we mentioned that debt and equity both have a cost attached to them. So therefore, by reducing the cost of capital and by maintaining the revenues, it's possible for the firm to increase the EVA by reducing the amount of working capital. Another way that we can relate working capital management to the health and the financial well-being of a firm is through the return on equity. So you will recall from financial accounting that the DuPont formula says that the ROE is equal to the profit margin multiplied by the asset turnover multiplied by the leverage ratio. And that is equal to the net income divided by sales multiplied by the sales divided by the total assets multiplied by the total assets divided by the equity. Now, if the financial managers reduce the working capital, then again they free up cash that was tied up. They can use this cash to reduce the external debt and equity. Therefore, they can reduce the total assets. If they reduce the total assets, then they can increase the turnover, the asset turnover, which is equal to the sales divided by the total assets, and therefore they can increase the ROE, the return on equity. So we've just talked about two possible benefits of minimizing or reducing the working capital. One of them is you can increase the EVA, economic value added, and therefore increase the value of the firm. And then the other advantage is that by reducing the working capital, you can increase the return on equity for the shareholders. Right, so let's talk about the first item in the current asset side of the balance sheet, and that is cash. Remember, as I always mention, that only cash is cash. Only cash will pay your bills. You can only pay your electricity and gas and phone bills and your mobile phone bills through cash, not through retained earnings or profits. Cash appears on the balance sheet. Cash, unfortunately, does not earn any profit. You can keep cash either in the bank or in the firm, in a lock or safe. So it's important to keep in mind that the cash is not earning any interest or any profit. What alternatives do firms have? Well, instead of keeping their funds in the form of cash, they can keep them in the form of marketable securities. Companies can also buy stocks and bonds, invest in them, and earn a rate of return. and they just need to make sure that these marketable securities that they invest in can be encashed quickly. However, we are on the subject of cash, and there are certain advantages to using cash. Companies need to maintain a minimum amount of cash for unexpected expenses. They also need to maintain a certain liquid position, and they need to maintain adequately high current asset and quick ratios. Otherwise, it will affect their credit rating negatively. If firms do not keep enough cash balances, then they can get poor credit ratings, and they can be considered high-risk companies. Companies need to maintain cash balances in order to maintain their credit rating. Remember, there are credit agencies that rate the riskiness of a firm, and they need to maintain a minimum cash balance. They also need to maintain minimum cash to meet liquidity and emergency expenditures, and they can also maintain cash balances in order to get trade discounts. In the business world, if you are willing to pay cash for something right now, cash down payment, then you can oftentimes get a discount. And in countries where bargaining is very common, particularly in developing countries, cash is king. And this is because if you pay cash, you can get trade discounts. You can buy something at a cheaper price. Now, one of the most important financial statements that we need to go over for cash management is known as the detailed cash budget. We spoke about the performer cash flow statement earlier on when we were talking about capital budgeting. But that was for a long-term duration of 5 years or 3 years or 10 years. Now we are talking about the short-term month-to-month cash budget. And this is generally prepared for only 1 year. And you prepare the expected or forecasted cash flows, cash inflows and cash outflows every month. And the objective of this exercise is that you are able to estimate what your cash surplus and cash shortfall will be every month for the next 12 months. And whenever you see a cash shortfall, then you need some sort of financing in order to fill the gap. And you might need to get short-term borrowing from a bank loan, or you might need to sell an asset in order to raise cash and to fill that gap, that cash shortfall. So let us take a look at the detailed cash budget. If you take a look at this slide, you will see an example of a cash budget with the most important items listed in the first column. And this cash budget has been prepared for some firm for 4 months, January, February, March, and April. Now, let us go down one column and go item by item. If we pick the month of February, the sales that have been forecasted for the month of February is 200,000 rupees. We are talking about thousands of rupees in this particular table. So these are the expected or forecasted sales. And now the financial manager has to estimate how much of this sales will be collected in the same month. In other words, if the sales in February were 200,000, then how much of these total sales will they be able to practically collect in the month of February, in the same month? And they have estimated, based on historical performance, that the collection department of the company can collect about 30% of the total sales in the same month. So 30% of 200,000 is 60,000. And the remaining portion, 70% of the sales, will be collected for the previous month. In other words, it takes 1 month to collect 70% of the sales for this month. If we are talking about February, then 70% of the sales for February will be collected in March. So 70% of 200,000 is 140,000 rupees, and that is what you see under the column for March, previous month collections. So the total collections for the month of February are 81,000 rupees. Now let's look at the purchases and the payments that need to be made for raw materials. Based on historical data, the firm has estimated that 70% of the next month's sales need to be purchased in this month. Remember that inventory has to be bought before sales. So 70% of the next month's sales, we are talking then, the next month is March, and in March they have estimated 300,000 rupees of sales. So 70% of 300,000 is 210,000 rupees. Now, the payments will be made in the next month. In other words, this company is getting 1 month credit whenever they buy raw material from their supplier. So, they are paying the payment for the previous month in the current month. In other words, in February, they will make the payment for the raw materials that were purchased in January. And that means they will pay 140,000 rupees. Now let's take a look at some of the other payments and expenses. For example, the wages, let's assume 10,000. Rent could be the rent for the warehouse or the office space, 10,000 again. And the tax expenses, 10,000 rupees again. And finally, the interest and dividends, which we'll assume to be zero. So now let's take a look at the figure for the total payments for the month of February. If you add up all the payments for February, they will add up to 380,000 rupees. Now, we have calculated the total collections, which have been highlighted. That is 81,000 rupees for February. And the total payments for February were 380,000 rupees. So the net cash for the month of February is minus 299,000 rupees. So the total payments come to 380,000 rupees for the month of February. And now we can calculate the net cash for the month of February. The net cash is equal to the total collections minus the total payments. And that is equal to minus 299,000 rupees for February. We can then add to that or subtract whatever previous month's cash figure was and calculate the cumulative cash that has been accumulated up to this point. That comes to 439,000 rupees negative. Now, firms like to keep certain minimum amount of target cash balances with them at all times. And let us assume that this firm needs to keep 20,000 rupees as the target cash balance every month. Therefore, we can now calculate the net cumulative cash that comes to minus 459,000 rupees for the month of February. Approximately 4.5 lakh rupees shortfall. There's a shortage of cash in February. Now, if you take a look at the sales at the top, you'll see that they're increasing. In January, they were 100, February 200, March 300, and in April, they went to 400. And if you come down the column for April, you will see that the firm has managed to improve its net cash position for the month. And by April, their net cash has improved to a positive figure, plus 20. And therefore, their cumulative cash and net cumulative cash requirements will start to shrink from now on. Now, what is this cash budget telling us? Well, we have forecasted the cash inflows in the form of cash receipts from sales, cash collections, and we have also forecasted the cash outflows in the form of payments for raw materials and other expenses. And we have then been able to calculate what the net cash position is expected to be for the next 12 months. And wherever there is a cash shortfall or a negative cash balance, it means that we need to fill this gap somehow. And the firm has a few options. They can either take short-term borrowing or short-term loans, or they can sell property or assets and generate cash to fill this gap, or they can generate equity. So there are various ways that a firm can source capital in order to fill this shortfall in cash. Now, we've gone through this simple numerical to explain how firms estimate the cash shortfall and surpluses that are upcoming over the next year. Now let's talk about what different types of cash management policies are used by financial managers. One of the overarching principles is to minimize the cash balance because cash is not earning any interest or any return. So other than the minimal target cash balance that firms have to keep in order to meet their petty cash expenses and day-to-day expenses, the firms will prefer to keep their money in the form of investments in stocks and bonds, marketable securities that are generating a rate of return, so that their money is working in order to pay the investors, the debt holders, and the stockholders. There are various policies that companies use for cash management, and one of them is known as cash flow synchronization. And basically, over here, what the companies do is that they maintain billing cycles. You see this very commonly in the mobile phone companies. Not everybody is billed at the same time. Some people receive their bill at the start of the month, and some people receive their bill in the middle of the month, on the 15th. And by doing this, companies can match the cash inflows to the cash outflows. So they can synchronize the cash that is coming into the company with the cash that is leaving the company. A mobile phone company, by billing the customers on the 15th, is able to receive cash close to the 15th within the next few days, and therefore it can take care of payments that it needs to make in the third week of the month. For example, it might have to make monthly payments for the electricity bill in the third week of the month. And by collecting the bills on the 15th, it is able to match the inflow of the cash with the outflow of the cash. Another policy that is commonly used in cash management is to speed up the cash collection. Companies have made sales or allowed customers to use their services, and in order to actually get the cash, they need to use various techniques. In many countries, it's difficult to collect the cash. Companies are oftentimes forced to sell products and to sell their services on credit for free, at least for a few days or maybe a few weeks. And this means that the competition in various countries can be so intense that you have to sell your services on credit. So you will perform the service now, or you will deliver the goods now to your customer, and the customer will pay you after 2 weeks or maybe a month or 2 months or longer. In the fabric market and cotton market in Pakistan, the credit terms can be very long, maybe 60 days or 90 days, 3 months, 4 months. So the money is stuck. They've made the sale, but they've not received the cash. So one of the challenges of cash management is to be able to speed up the collection of cash. How do firms do this? Well, they have a team of collectors, and these people are notorious. Oftentimes they wear black suits and black glasses, and they are famous for giving threats in order to recover the money. Another technique that firms use is to write very, very severe kinds of letters, and they can also threaten legal action as a last resource. But before that, they can subcontract this collection work to collection agencies. There are various agencies, even in Pakistan, that will help companies to collect their money. Credit card companies and banks use these collection agencies, and these people are paid to help the bank collect the money. One final type of cash management policy that is used is known as the float management. And this is basically a game of trying to make sure that whenever somebody pays you in the form of a check, that you are very efficient and quick in collecting that check, depositing it in the bank, and claiming your cash. Remember that in every country, The check takes a few days to clear. In other words, if you deposit a check in your name in your bank account today in Pakistan, it will take anywhere between 1 to 2 days for the cash to be credited in your bank account. Pakistan is relatively quick in the check clearance. There are other countries where it always takes 2 days and it's not possible to get it done in 1 day. Under speedy clearance facilities in Pakistan, you can even have checks cleared in the same day, provided you deposit the check very early in the morning. So the objective of float management is to deposit the checks that are received in your name as quickly as possible so that you encash them. And by doing this, then, whatever checks that you have issued to others would take probably a longer amount of time if your suppliers are more slow at encashing their checks, and therefore you maintain a positive cash balance or a positive cash float in your bank account, which you can use for emergency purposes if you have unexpected expenses or payments to make. We will talk more about these cash management policies in the next lecture. Let me close the new material for this lecture right here, and let us recap some of the policies and the business judgment that we have spoken about in this lecture on working capital management. So we began this lecture talking about the definition of working capital. By working capital, we mean current assets. We made a distinction between this and net working capital, which is current assets minus current liabilities. And this is, of course, different from capital, the way we used it in capital budgeting. And that is different from the way we use the word capital in capital structure. We mentioned that the fundamental trade-off and the balance that we have to strike in working capital management is whether to maintain high current assets or a low amount of current assets. So we spoke about some different working capital management policies. One of them is known as the fat cat policy. That is also known as the relaxed policy, in which the financial manager maintains a large amount of current assets. And by doing this, they manage to fulfill every order because they keep a large amount of inventory. They can even take care of large orders that arise unexpectedly, so they don't lose any sales revenue. The other policy that is followed is known as the lean and mean policy. In this case, the financial managers maintain a low amount of current assets. Therefore, they free the cash that is tied up in working capital. They can use this cash to reduce their debt and equity, and therefore also reduce the cost of capital. The lean and mean policy also allows the financial manager to increase the current asset turnover, and therefore increase the total profits. Please remember that working capital ties up money. Money gets stuck in the form of inventory, cash, accounts receivables, and so on. And oftentimes this money that is stuck up is not generating any rate of return. Cash doesn't earn any interest. Inventory, that is unfinished goods, work in progress or raw materials, do not earn any interest or any rate of return, so it is very costly. We spoke about the contribution of working capital management to the value of the firm through the EVA and to the return on equity, ROE. And then we spoke about the importance of being able to prepare a cash budget. And this cash budget is a detailed cash budget over the short term for 1 year, and you estimate the cash inflows and outflows for the next 12 months in order to calculate your short-term borrowing requirements if there is a cash shortfall. Finally, we spoke about some cash management policies that are followed and which we will go over in the next lecture. I thank you for your kind attention and patience. This material on cash management is covered in chapters 3 in Brigham and Kapinski. On behalf of the Virtual University of Pakistan, the Ministry of Science and Technology, and Mubashir Humayun, I thank you. Khuda Hafiz and Assalamu Alaikum.